Chapter 11. The Fiskook and Idun of School Districts in Nebraska is Small Beautiful. By Carrier Atcliff, Bruce Riddle, and John Yinger. Introduction. As of 1986 to 1987, Nebraska contains 927 school districts which provide educational services to over 266,000 students in pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, elementary, and secondary grades. In this chapter, we describe the finances of Nebraska school districts, examine the impact of social and economic factors on the fiscal condition of these districts, evaluate current state assistance for school districts, and reveal the potential gains from school district consolidation through reduced fiscal disparities across school districts and through economies of scale in the provision of education. Overview. This chapter is based upon the notion of a school district's fiscal condition, which is the impact of economic and social characteristics outside the control of school officials on the school district's ability to provide education to the students for whom they are responsible. We find that school districts in Nebraska vary widely in their fiscal condition. School districts in good fiscal condition tend to be districts that are either very large or very small, with middle-sized districts in the worst fiscal condition on average. However, not all school districts of the same size have the same fiscal condition. Some small districts, for example, are in very poor fiscal shape. The principal sources of state assistance to school districts are the foundation, incentive, and equalization aid programs. Although all districts receive some state aid, we find that the aid programs combined do not give greater assistance to school districts in poorer fiscal condition. Rather, current state programs actually worsen the disparities in fiscal condition among districts somewhat by inadvertently rewarding those districts with higher revenue-raising capacities. We suggest that aid programs could be modified to direct assistance to the school districts that are in poor fiscal condition because of economic and social factors outside their control. However, a program of school district consolidation has the potential for reducing the disparities in fiscal condition among school districts in a much more cost-effective manner. We provide examples of consolidation and reveal the potential gains from these programs. Given the severe fiscal disadvantages that some school districts face in providing education to their students, and the potential for reducing disadvantages that consolidation provides, we strongly recommend implementation of a major consolidation program. We also recommend that new aid programs be designed to offset fiscal disparities across school districts that remain after consolidation has been implemented. Institutional setting. This chapter considers 927 school districts operating in 1986 to 1987, using information from that year and prior years. The analysis presented is a snapshot of fiscal conditions in a changing environment. From a peak in the late 1960s of 390,000 students, statewide school enrollment has steadily declined to today's 266,000 students. This decline in enrollment has been accompanied by a little school district consolidation. Since 1984 to 1985, 30 school districts have consolidated into other districts. Most of these consolidations have taken place among the Class 1 districts, which provide elementary education only and cover areas of 1,000 inhabitants or fewer. Approximately 95% of the 582 active Class 1 districts serve fewer than 100 students, 60% of the districts serve fewer than 20 students. Table 11.1 provides a 3-year history of the number of both school districts and students. Class 2 districts, which also serve populations of 1,000 or fewer, differ from Class 1 districts in that they maintain a high school along with elementary schools. The 58 Class 2 districts range in size from 30 to 250 students. The 222 Class 3 districts are in areas with populations greater than 1,000 but less than 100,000. Class 3 enrollments range from 70 to 1,500 students, and 75% of these districts have fewer than 600 students. Class 4 and Class 5 are reserved for Lincoln and Omaha, respectively. combined enrollment for these two school systems is 66,841, which is 25% of total public school enrollment in the state. The 23 Class 6 districts only maintain high schools. The smallest Class 6 school district has an enrollment of 30 and the largest has an enrollment of 670. To summarize, Nebraska school system is made up predominantly of districts that serve very few students. About 65% of the districts, 615, have fewer than 100 students, and 96% of the districts have fewer than 1,000 students. This institutional picture is complicated because districts can provide different levels of services: pre-kindergarten, kindergarten to 6th grade, kindergarten to 8th grade, grades 7 to 12, grades 9 to 12, or kindergarten to 12th grade. Our analysis focuses on 865 districts for which we have complete data. Districts reporting no school-age children for which they are responsible and districts that send all their school-age children to other districts are eliminated from the analysis, along with districts lacking indicators important to the analysis. Four other districts are eliminated from the analysis for reasons described later. The 57 eliminated districts are listed in Appendix 11B, School District Finances in Nebraska. Tables 11.2, 11.3, and 11.4, which are based on the accounting system employed by the U.S. Bureau of the Census, provide a picture of fiscal year 1986 school finances in Nebraska and in the United States as a whole. The average school district in Nebraska raised $4,484 per student in general revenue and spent $3,992 per student in general expenditure during 1986. The small surplus in these numbers does not imply that school districts run a surplus in their own budgetary accounts. In Table 11.2, financial information about Nebraska is presented in two ways. The first column presents amounts per student in the average school district. The second column presents the percentage breakdown of statewide totals. For example, intergovernmental revenue received by all school districts in the state constitutes about 32% of the general revenue collected by all school districts in the state. This format is continued in Tables 11.3 and 11.4. The majority of school districts' general revenue, 67%, comes from their own sources, and about 80% of this own source revenue comes from the property tax. Charges and miscellaneous sources make up the other approximately 20% of own source revenue. The figures for Nebraska school districts in Table 11.2 can be compared to the national figures in Table 11.3. Nebraska school districts are not typical of the nation as a whole. The average school district in the nation raised $4,046 per student in general revenue, or about $440 less than the average Nebraska district. The average school district in the nation spent $3,860 per student, or about $100 less than the average Nebraska district. Although the property tax is the major own source of revenue for school districts nationally, the average school district in the nation received far more intergovernmental aid than the average Nebraska school district. On a per-student basis, the average school district in the nation received twice as much state aid as the average school district in Nebraska. A comparison of operating expenditures reveals little difference between the average Nebraska school district and the average school district in the nation. Moreover, about 62% of general expenditure goes to salaries and wages in both Nebraska and the nation. In contrast, the national average capital outlay is twice as high as in the average Nebraska school district. Table 11.4 describes school finances in Nebraska for three different groups of school districts: fewer than 100 students, between 100 and 1,000 students, and more than 1,000 students. Among the 921 districts for which we have financial data and enrollment information, 603 districts fall into the first class, 277 districts fall into the second class, and 41 districts fall into the third class. Table 11.4 reveals that general revenue per student is the highest in the small districts. General expenditure per student is the highest for the middle class, and both general revenue and general expenditure per student are the smallest for the large districts. Some of the differences in revenue reflect differences in direct federal aid and in federal aid passed through the state to the small and large districts. The smaller districts receive, on average, $125 to $150 less per student in federal aid. In addition, the reliance on taxes declines as student enrollment increases, principally because the large districts rely more heavily on charges. Total expenditure per student declines as district enrollment increases, but salaries and wages increase as a percentage of expenditure. These results suggest that larger districts are able to take advantages of some economies of scale, an issue to which we will return. The fiscal condition of school districts. This chapter focuses on the fiscal condition of school districts in Nebraska. It complements the analyses of county and municipality fiscal condition in other chapters. The concept of fiscal condition. As we use the term, a school district's fiscal condition is its ability to deliver adequate public education to its children at a reasonable tax burden upon its residents, as determined by economic and social factors that are outside the control of the school district's administrators. Our measure of fiscal condition does not reveal a school district's budgetary situation, and it is not affected by management skill, teaching capabilities, or service preferences. In effect, a school district's fiscal condition indicates the severity of the constraints under which its administrators and teachers must operate, but it does not indicate how they respond to those constraints. This approach to fiscal condition has three key advantages. First, it facilitates comparisons across school districts of different sizes, classes, and characteristics. Our measure, for example, enables us to compare different districts' potential for providing the same quality education with the same tax burden on each district's residents. Second, because it excludes political and management factors, as well as the residents' preferences for education, our measure can serve as an objective guide for state assistance to school districts. Finally, our measure enables us to investigate the fiscal effects of consolidation, and in particular the impact of consolidation on differences in fiscal condition among school districts. Our measure of a school district's fiscal condition is called the need-capacity gap, and is the difference between a district's expenditure need and its revenue-raising capacity, both expressed in per-student terms. The expenditure need of a district is the per-student expenditure that is required in order for the district to provide an average quality education to its students. A school district's revenue-raising capacity is the amount of money per student it can raise at a given tax burden on its residents. In the following section, we explain and calculate the revenue-raising capacity, expenditure need, and need-capacity gap of school districts in Nebraska. In the succeeding two sections, we examine the determinants of school district spending in Nebraska and the options for state policy towards school districts. The technical details of our calculations are explained in Appendix 11A. In Appendix 11B, we list the districts we dropped from our analysis due to insufficient information. In Appendix 11C, we present our measurement of fiscal health, the need capacity gap, for each of the 865 districts in our analysis. Finally, in Appendix 11D, we describe our data sources, and in Appendix 11E, present our suggestions for maintaining and expanding this database. Revenue-raising capacity. Revenue-raising capacity is defined to be the amount of money a school district can raise at a given tax burden on its residents. Our measure of revenue-raising capacity does not include state and federal aid, nor is it a measure of the revenue districts actually raise. Instead, it is a measure of the revenue that the school district could generate from its own resources if it imposed the statewide average tax burden on its residents. The revenue that a district actually raises is influenced by the management skill of school administrators and the educational preferences of the district's residents. Our measure of revenue-raising capacity, as we explained below, depends only on the school district's income and economic structure, which are outside the direct control of school officials. General principles. As we use the term, A tax burden indicates the magnitude of public sector claims on private incomes. For example, a property tax burden can be expressed as a property tax payment as a percentage of income. Revenue-raising capacity is calculated with the same tax burden, namely the statewide average tax burden, in every school district. Because we hold the tax burden constant, variations in revenue-raising capacity across school districts can arise for only three reasons: differences in income per student, differences in the ability of school districts to export taxes to non-residents, or differences in the extent to which districts must share their taxable resources with other school districts. The first reason for variation in the revenue-raising capacity of school districts is that income varies across jurisdictions. School districts with high resident incomes can raise more revenue at a given tax burden than other districts. The extent of the variation can be seen in Table 11.5. Throughout the state, the minimum income per student in a district is $7,264, whereas the maximum is $710,905, and the standard deviation is $63,318. The four districts that display the lowest income per student share similar characteristics: low per capita incomes, and low ratios of resident population to enrolled students. These places are District No. 210084. Sargent School District, District No. 540505, Santee School District, District No. 840055, Stanton County School District 55, and District No. 870016, Macy School District. In contrast, the districts that display the highest incomes per student tend to have high ratios of resident population to enrolled students and high per capita incomes. The four richest districts, which all display incomes per student over $400,000, are District No. 590003, Madison County School District No. 3, District No. 830048, Sioux County District No. 48, District No. 240047, Dawson County District No. 47, and District No. 270091, Dodge County School District No. 91. We find that the districts with fewer than 10 students have the highest average income per student, and in general that as the number of students that defines an enrollment group increases, the smaller is the average income per student in that group of districts. Within each enrollment group, however, income per student varies widely. Districts of size 1,000 to 2,000 have the least variation, standard deviation of $6,061, and districts with fewer than 10 students display the greatest variation, standard deviation of $86,560. Because we observe such significant variation among districts with similar enrollments, we cannot conclude that district size is a clear indicator of district income. In fact, districts with the same enrollments, resident populations, and taxable property bases may differ greatly in incomes. The second reason one might observe differences in revenue-raising capacity is differences in the ability of districts to export taxes to non-residents. A school district's taxes are exported whenever they are paid by non-residents, either directly or indirectly in the form of higher prices or lower wages. Exported taxes increase a school district's revenue-raising capacity because they allow the district to raise more revenue with no added burden on residents. A school district's ability to export taxes to non-residents depends on its economic structure and on the taxes it utilizes. Because the only broad-based tax used by school districts is the property tax, our estimates of a district's ability to export, which we discuss below, focus upon the composition of the property tax base. We observe an overlap of school districts in Nebraska because some classes of districts are responsible for educating all of their school-age children, whereas others are responsible for educating only high school or only elementary students. For example, Class 6 districts and affiliated Class 1 districts overlap, and both collect taxes from the same residents. Class 1 districts not affiliated with a Class 6 district provide only elementary education, and a separate tax must be levied to finance payments to the districts that provide education to the secondary students who live in these Class 1 districts. These separate taxes are called non-resident high school tuition. Another form of overlap arises when a district sends some or all of its students requiring special education, along with the appropriate tuition payments, to another district. In addition, Nebraska has established 19 educational service units, ESUs, which provide a variety of services to the participating school districts, including special education and audiovisual services. During the school year 1985 to 1986, all school districts in the state received services from ESUs, except for the districts located within Blaine, Custer, Dawes, Howard, Merrick, Red Willow, Sheridan, and Sioux counties. ESUs levy separate taxes on all participating districts. To account for overlapping taxes and inter-district payments, we focus on the capacity of each district to raise revenue for the students it actually educates, holding constant across districts the burden of all school-related claims on the incomes of district residents. Under this approach, a district's total revenue-raising capacity is reduced whenever it makes tuition or transportation payments to another district, or overlapping districts collect taxes from its residents. Moreover, a district's revenue-raising capacity is increased when it receives payments from another jurisdiction for tuition or transportation. A district's revenue-raising capacity per student equals its total revenue-raising capacity divided by the number of students it actually educates. In making these adjustments, we do not use the revenue actually raised by an overlapping district or the payments actually exchanged between districts. Instead, we use the revenue that would be collected at the relevant statewide average tax burden or the statewide average payment. This approach ensures that a school district's net revenue-raising capacity does not depend on the actual revenue raised by other districts, to which that district sends students, just as it does not depend on the actual revenue raised by the school district itself. Revenue-raising capacity through the property tax. The property tax is the single most important source of revenue for school districts in Nebraska. To calculate revenue-raising capacity through the property tax, we estimate the average tax burden in the state for the provision of education services to elementary, secondary, and special education students. This burden, expressed as the ratio of total property taxes collected to aggregate income, is called the baseline tax burden. As we discussed earlier, we adjust this burden to reflect taxes collected by overlapping districts. Inter-district payments are considered in a later section. Finally, we determine the extent to which the property tax burden is exported. In our analyses of county and municipal fiscal condition, we determine the degree to which property taxes can be exported to non-residents by combining an analysis of the incidence of the property tax with data on the composition of the property tax base. Data on the composition of property within school districts are not available, so we estimated school district property composition on the basis of the composition of property within the district's county and the share of the district that is within a city or village. The details of our estimating technique are presented in Appendix 11A. Following standard procedure, we assume that the tax on commercial and industrial property is borne primarily by company owners and landowners, and that many of these owners are non-resident stockholders. Using national average figures on corporate ownership, we estimate that 50% of the tax burden on commercial real estate is paid by non-residents. Additionally, we assume that 25% of all public utility and personal property taxes are borne by non-residents. A school district's pre-exporting revenue-raising capacity per student equals the baseline tax burden, adjusted for the taxes collected by overlapping districts, multiplied by the income per student in the school district. The export ratio is defined to be the share of taxes exported to non-residents divided by the share of taxes paid by residents. This ratio measures the taxes collected from non-residents for every dollar of taxes collected from residents. To adjust for export potential, we multiply pre-export capacity by 1 plus the export ratio. Export ratios for enrollment groups are presented in Table 11.6. These range from 0 to a maximum of 0.21, with a standard deviation of 0.04. The export ratio in the average school district is 0.03. That is, Only 3 cents of tax burden are exported for every dollar of taxes paid by residents. Our enrollment size breakdowns reveal that, on average, as districts increase in size, their capacity to export also grows. The largest districts have the highest export ratios, and the ratios are similar for all districts in this group. 8. In contrast, districts with enrollments of up to 9,999 students display very large differences in export ratios within each size category. Revenue-raising capacity from the property tax, expressed in index form, is presented in Table 11.7. For convenience, the average district has an index of 100. A school district with a capacity of 150 has 50% more capacity than the average school district. The standard deviation in the index is 72.16. Most school districts fall within one standard deviation of the average, that is between 100 minus 72.16 equals 27.84, and 100 plus 72.16 equals 172.16. The highest capacity index is 808.09, and the lowest is 9.49. Capacity through the property tax is highest in the smallest districts. Enrollments, below 10, and the largest districts. Enrollments, above 1,000. Districts with intermediate enrollments have lower average capacity, but the variation within each enrollment grouping is quite significant. The smallest districts in particular have widely varying capacity. Most of the variation in this capacity appears to result from the large differences in income per student. As discussed earlier, even districts with similar enrollment sizes, populations, and property valuations may have significant differences in income per student. Revenue-raising capacity from other sources. School districts also collect revenue from charges and fees. According to Table 11.2, charges and miscellaneous revenues account for 18.6% of total loan source revenue. In this section, we explain how we calculate revenue-raising capacity from these sources. Because miscellaneous charges and fees apply mainly to residents, we assume that these revenue sources have no export potential. The average burden across the state for charges and miscellaneous income equals total revenue from these sources divided by aggregate income. Our assumption about exporting implies that a district's revenue-raising capacity per student from charges and miscellaneous income equals the average burden multiplied by the income per student in that district. Capacity from these sources, in index form, is summarized in Table 11.8. For all districts, the capacity index for charges and miscellaneous income ranges from 11 up to 1072. The standard deviation of the index is 95. The variation in this component of capacity is quite dramatic. On average, the smaller is the district, the larger is its capacity from charges per student. However, just as there is great variation within enrollment groups in capacity from the property tax, there is great variation within all groups in capacity from charges. As before, this large variation is due to the disparities in income per student among districts. Overall revenue-raising capacity. In order to arrive at a figure for overall revenue-raising capacity, we add capacity from the property tax and capacity from other sources. We then adjust this sum to reflect capacity gained or lost through inter-school district payments of tuition and transportation fees, which are commonly made in Nebraska. Many school districts in the state either send some of their students to other districts or receive students from other districts. In some cases, they both send and receive students. Although the reasons for these student exchanges vary, a district's capacity is affected by each student sent or received. When a sending district makes a tuition payment, the dollar amount of that payment directly reduces the capacity available to that district to educate the remaining students. Likewise, when a district receives a student, its overall capacity is enhanced by the dollar amount of the payment. In Appendix 11A, we describe in detail how we adjust capacity for inter-district payments. The overall revenue-raising capacity of Nebraska school districts, expressed in dollars per student, is summarized in Table 11.9. In the stable, the average capacity per student is set equal to the average current spending per student in Nebraska. This standardization does not change the relative position of one school district to another, it simply facilitates comparison of capacities and needs later in our analysis. The variation in overall revenue-raising capacity for school districts is quite substantial. The range is from $0 up to $29,967 per student. Six school districts, very small in population and income, have a capacities of zero. The correct interpretation of this result is that these districts would not have any revenue left over to educate their own students if they impose the baseline tax burden upon their residents and paid the tuition and transportation charges they owe other districts. In contrast, some districts have dramatically high revenue-raising capacity. The school district with the highest capacity is District 3 in Madison County, which, due to its very high income per student, has a revenue-raising capacity per student of almost $30,000. The average capacity per student is $3,504, so District 3 could raise over 8.5 times as much revenue per student at the baseline tax burden as the average district. District 3's income per capita is not unusually high at $7,444, but only 35 children are enrolled in this district, where the adult population is 3,285. As a result, District 3 can generate a great deal of revenue per student at an average tax burden. We observe from our results that in general, for districts with enrollments greater than 20, capacity per student increases as enrollment rises. The enrollment size groups with the highest overall revenue-raising capacity are districts with more than 9,999 students and districts with fewer than 10 students. These groups of districts also had the highest capacity through the property tax alone. The smallest districts have, on average, a capacity of $4,555 per student. The largest districts have an average capacity of $4,618 per student. Districts with enrollments of between 20 and 29 students have, on average, the least ability to generate revenue, as indicated by their capacity of $2,766. Within each enrollment size group, however, there is substantial variation in capacity. For example, most enrollment groups have a standard deviation in capacity well in excess of $1,000 per student. Expenditure need. A school district's expenditure need is the amount it must spend to provide an education of average quality to each of the children enrolled in its schools. In this section, we examine the expenditure needs of Nebraska school districts. The concept of expenditure need, like the concept of revenue-raising capacity, is designed to facilitate comparisons across school districts. By holding constant educational quality and focusing on factors outside the control of local officials, comparisons based on actual education spending can be misleading because spending is by no means the same thing as service quality. Some high-spending districts may be poorly managed or may face relatively high costs and may therefore receive very little education for their money. Moreover, actual spending is controlled by school officials and therefore cannot be an objective basis for comparison. To measure a district's expenditure need, we identify factors that are largely outside the control of school officials and that influence the cost of providing education. Then we use a simple statistical procedure to determine the impact of these factors on spending by school districts in Nebraska, controlling for all other spending determinants. This procedure is described in Appendix 11A. For example, handicapped students are more expensive to educate than other students. The higher the share of district students who are handicapped, therefore, the more the district must spend per pupil to achieve education of average quality. We find five factors that influence the cost of public education in Nebraska. Our measure of expenditure need reflects the impact of each of these factors on the cost of education. As already noted, the first factor that influences the cost of education is the number of handicapped students the district educates. The available data indicate the number of handicapped children who live in each school district. Because not all districts educate, and transport the handicapped children that live within their boundaries. However, we make adjustments in the number of handicapped children by district to reflect the shifting of responsibilities of these students from district to district. See Appendix 11A. We find that for every increase of 1 percentage point in the ratio of net handicapped students to total students, the total operating costs per student of a district rise by $9. This cost factor does not appear to operate in tiny school districts, fewer than 10 pupils, perhaps, because they rarely educate severely handicapped students themselves. The second factor that influences expenditure need is transportation cost, as determined by the number of students that the district is required to transport and the number of miles these students must be transported. Our analysis reveals that, controlling for other factors, a district must spend an additional $84 for an increase of 1 percentage point in the ratio of students eligible for transportation to total students. Districts that either are not required to transport students, such as Class 6 districts, or districts that are not spread out and have few students to transport do not have to spend as much as other districts to achieve average quality education. The third factor that increases the cost of providing education is the proportion of secondary students to elementary students in the district. Not surprisingly, we find that, on average, it costs more for school districts to provide an average quality education to secondary students than to elementary grade students. Normally, additional services and activities are provided for secondary students, such as more extensive curriculum and sport programs. To be specific, we find that for every increase of 1 percentage point in the ratio of secondary to elementary students, a district must spend $8 more per enrolled student. The fourth cost factor is that larger school districts in Nebraska apparently can take advantage of significant economies of scale. We find that the cost of education per pupil declines as the total number of students in a district increases. This relationship is not linear, however. In the case of small changes in enrollment, for every increase of 1% in enrollment, a district needs to spend roughly $5.39 less per student. Large increases in enrollment can have an even more dramatic impact on costs per pupil. If district enrollment is increased by 10 times, for example, by combining 10 districts with 10 students each into a single district, then the cost per student will decline by $1,241. These economies to scale reflect the fact that larger districts can spread out the cost of administration, libraries, and other system-wide activities over a larger number of students. These results concerning economies to scale are complicated by a fifth factor, namely cost differences across classes of school districts. After controlling for all identifiable cost and other factors, including district scale, we find that some classes of school districts spend less per pupil than others. Compared to either Class 2, small, with elementary and secondary students, or Class 6, secondary only, districts, Class 1, elementary only, districts spend $2,810 less per student than Class 3 districts. Large, with elementary and secondary, spends $345 less per pupil. We cannot determine whether these differences in spending across classes of school districts reflect cost differences or differences in educational quality. To put it another way, these spending differences exist even after we have controlled for all the cost factors and all the determinants of educational quality that we can identify. Nevertheless, we assume that these leftover spending differences reflect differences in cost across districts. For example, Class 1 districts may have lower costs than other districts, all else equal, because they do not have to pay as much as other districts to attract teachers. We cannot test this hypothesis directly because we do not have any data on wage rates by school district. We regard this assumption as conservative in the sense that it makes the current system, with its predominance of Class 1 districts, look as favorable as possible. When these leftover spending differences between classes are interpreted as cost differences, they offset, to some degree, the economies of scale described earlier. The total enrollment variable indicates that costs per pupil decline as district enrollment increases, but the spending differences by class indicate that Class 1 districts, many of which contain less than 10 students, have lower costs than other districts. In other words, we discover strong economies of scale within any given class of district, but obtain two offsetting results about the economies of scale that exist between the smallest class, Class 1, and larger classes of districts. By combining these two results, we find that the cost per pupil is about the same for a Class 1 district and a Class 3 district that is 100 times as large, whereas a Class 3 district will have lower costs than a Class 1 district if its enrollment is more than 100 times as large. To place this result in perspective, note that consolidating several tiny Class 1 districts with a large Class 6 or Class 3 district could easily result in a single district that was more than 100 times as large as the individual Class 1 districts, and could therefore lower per pupil costs. In most cases, for example, a single countywide district would contain more than 100 times as many students as the individual Class 1 districts currently in the county, and would therefore face lower costs per pupil than the Class 1 districts. Finally, we emphasize that to some degree the leftover spending differences across district classes may reflect differences in educational quality instead of costs. To the extent that this is true, the economies of scale that can be captured by combining Class 1 districts with each other or with other districts are larger than these examples suggest. We combine these five cost factors: handicapped students, transportation costs, elementary versus secondary students, economies of scale, and interclass cost differences, into a single cost index for each school district in the state. A district with favorable cost conditions, such as few handicapped students or low transportation costs, will have to spend less than the statewide average per pupil, $3,504, to obtain educational services of average quality. A district with unfavorable cost conditions will have to spend more than the average per pupil to obtain an average quality education. See Appendix 11A for the details of our cost index construction. The results of our expenditure needs assessment, expressed in dollars per student, are presented in Table 11.10. A district's expenditure need is the dollars per pupil that it must spend to provide an average quality education. Expenditure needs range from a low of $1,285, or 35% of the average, to a high of $6,116, or 175% of the average. The average expenditure need is $3,504 per student. The standard deviation is $85, so most districts must spend between $2,650 and $4,358 per student. The average expenditure need of districts with fewer than 10 students is $3,449, which is relatively high compared to the expenditure needs of districts with enrollments of 10 to 100 students. The average expenditure need of districts with enrollments of 100 to 499 students is $4,362, which is the highest average expenditure need for all groups. As enrollment increases above 500 students, the average expenditure need of school districts falls. The largest group, which includes Lincoln School District, Omaha School District, and Millard School District in Douglas County, has the lowest average expenditure need, at $2,128. The single district with the greatest need is District Number 600090, McPherson County High School. This high school has a need of over $6,000 per student, because it educates secondary students only, and has high overhead costs in providing this education to its small enrollment of 34.